Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Cheap Seats Chatter, the Overtime Heroics Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Alex Clark. Joining me today, as always, the dynamic duo of Matthias Altman-Kurosaki and Ryan Splash Potts, as we like to start every podcast we do together. Boys, how are we doing today?
I'm chilling, you know. I'm home for a bit. But yeah, I'm doing well. I mean, the Mets are losing today, but I feel like they can afford a loss. So it is what it is. I went to two Mets games this weekend. I saw them win yesterday. I saw them shut out the Phillies 6-0. I was also at their extra inning game on Friday. But yeah, it was nice to actually go to a couple games this weekend at Citi Field. I love going to baseball games, obviously. And yeah, it's good. This is actually a rare summer where I've had time to go to a bunch of games. So yeah, this is fun. I'm doing well though, I'd say.
I'm vibing right now. just watching the Braves game. It's raining. I'll be visiting my grandmother tomorrow, which is fun. I am currently leading. I'm on top of the leaderboard on U Stadium's Takes feature. So I'm very excited about that. The guy in second place has won the last 2 or 3 months, and he's like endlessly talks trash about it, and I'm, you know, 20,000 points ahead of him with half the month to go. So I'm excited. I'm on pace to win 1 million points this month. So that's alarming. I have a gambling addiction and I need help.
I was about to read off the gambling addiction helpline number, but I feel like that would just get a little gratuitous there. But no, I'm doing okay overall. I am excited to talk about some baseball, even though we are not starting out with the most fun of segments, shall we say, as we do have to break some news. Actually, not break. It has been out for a little bit, but still sad to see. San Diego Padres star Fernando Tatis Jr. is now suspended for 80 games for PEDs, for performance-enhancing drugs, as he tested positive for the anabolic steroid cholestabol, and which, again, is part of which is very much a banned substance in Major League Baseball. Suspended 80 games, and guys, I was completely shocked when I heard this. I don't know about you guys, but for a young guy that is one of the faces of this game, seeing that he just got hit with this level of punishment and for, again, taking steroids. Guys, what was your first take when you guys first heard about this?
I think it's just lame, honestly. Like the whole for ringworm, or his dad said for a haircut, all I see is a young player not taking responsibility for his actions. And, you know, if it was for ringworm or for a bad haircut or what have you, don't you think you should, I don't know, talk to your organization, talk to your doctor, talk to your general manager, talk to anyone in the city of San Diego? I think this just, if you're the Padres and you're looking at a dollar figure over Fernando Tatis's head, that $340 million contract, you blew $34 million because Tatis is an idiot. Like, he had self-inflicted, like, motorcycle accident, so he misses the first 100-something games and was in the minors on a rehab assignment right now. So it's August 15th when we're recording this. He still isn't healthy. And then, 80 game suspension for steroids. Awesome. So you're going to miss the entire season, your age 23 season, miss the entire season, miss the entire playoff run on a good team. We're going to talk about their World Series aspirations later. And now you're going to miss the start of next season. And barring any other motorcycle accident, or I don't know, maybe he's going to chop a hand off cooking. I don't know with Tatis. I think if you're the Padres, you're AJ Preller, you are looking at yourselves in the mirror and you are slapping yourselves because you paid him $34 million a season for the next 10 years and he can't stay on the baseball field. And look, that he's had injuries before. That's fine. Injuries happen in baseball, right? Like, Dansby Swanson slid into second base today. His helmet flew off and it bounced off the ground and whacked him in the face. Okay, injuries happen. But Tatis is not an injuries happen thing. He is almost like hurting himself in a way, quite literally hurting himself off the baseball field. And it is demoralizing the Padres. It is a distraction from what should be one of the most exciting teams in baseball. And he is one of the most exciting players to ever play the sport. We talked about it last week that we were so excited, or a couple weeks ago, we were so excited to see Soto and Tatis play together. But Tatis is saying, LOL, no, I'm going to take steroids and get an 80-game suspension, and I'm going to get in a motorcycle accident and miss the first 120-plus games anyways. So I think it's just immature, and I think if you're the Padres, you have more than a baseball issue. You have a human issue, a human-to-human misunderstanding with the best player in the history of your franchise at this point, at least talent-wise. Sorry, Tony Gwynn.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, Splash. Actually, that contract is for 14 years. That's the thing. It's 14 years and $340 million. So he's on the books for a long time. And I don't know if I really buy the whole ringworm story here. That's the thing, is that that's like, I remember when Henry Mejia tested positive 3 times in the span of a year, and he claims he didn't know how it got in his body and all this stuff. And I've heard so many other players say that, and I'm like, do I believe any of this stuff? That's the thing, is that I do want to believe Tatis. Maybe he doesn't know how that happened. And then, you know, that's what his dad was saying, like, all right, yeah, he was using it to treat fungus or something. But this is just, it's irresponsible, seriously. And like you were saying, Splash, like, at least consult with someone, consult with your manager, consult with your GM, your agent, whoever it is. Do something to ensure that you're not breaking the rules, because nowadays the consequences are very clearly laid out in front of you, you know. And, you know, yeah, I was so excited to see Tatis, Soto, and Machado in the same lineup, you know, batting probably consecutively in the batting order. And it's just, disappointing is not a word that a strong enough word to describe how I feel about this whole situation. I mean, the one thing I will say about this is that Tatis is still very young. He's only 23 years old, 23. So he still has a long way to go if he wants to mend his legacy, you know. I mean, you make a mistake when you're young. All right, a lot of people make mistakes when they're young. So hopefully he learns from this. Hopefully he learns from the motorcycle accident or whatever the heck that was. And the other thing is that he also has a shoulder problem. So he maybe now he gets surgery on his shoulder or something. Bear in mind, he also can't play in the World Baseball Classic anymore. And we were all getting very hyped up. I know a lot of people were to watch that Dominican Republic team, which was going to have Tatis playing shortstop and Soto in the outfield. So this is a complete mess right now. The Padres did not pull any punches. His teammates, the executives, AJ Preller, all voiced their disappointment. So I hope he learns from this, because this not only just – it does not hurt him. It hurts everybody, really. And the sport of baseball really takes a hit here.
Here's the thing that I think about when it comes to this, is that there's something on the team that could have very easily prevented all of this. It's called a team doctor. Team doctors are there for one reason and one reason alone, to make sure the players stay on the field. And that job not only includes, you know, treating injuries and all that, but also deals, it's something very important. That's called making sure that the medications that these people are taking for any sort of ailments, making sure that everything that is within those medications still works within the guidelines of Major League Baseball. And if Tatis is to be believed, then that means he also went up against his own team doctor, because I don't think in anyone's right mind we could say at that point that the Padres team doctor is at fault here. I don't hear anyone saying that, and I don't think it's the case here. I think at this point right now, this is the case of a kid that just got caught. He's trying to find a way out of it. And the fact that there are multiple stories being told about it, like you said, the haircut, there's the thing for ringworm and all that, it just doesn't mean anything anymore. Because we all know that regardless of it, the answer is still, the result is still the exact same. He's still getting suspended for 80 games, but there's a bigger underlying issue here, and you really got on this one here, Splash, and I appreciate that, is that this is not the first time of a mental mistake by Tatis where that has caused him to be off the field. Yes, he's had the steroids bit, but like we said, the biking accidents, other sorts of injuries that were definitely not baseball related. That you needed to be smarter about, that he needed to make sure he's continuing to stay on the field for. This guy just signed a huge deal, 14 million, no, sorry, not 14, 14 years, 14 years. And like you just said, Splash, he's been off the field more than he's been on it at this point. He is continuously being hurt. He is continuously finding ways to not play the game. And for the fans, it also sucks because we were begging at this point to see the trio of Soto, Tatis, Machado. That trio right there was going to be like, we were talking about this on an earlier podcast. We were talking about that trio was going to become the true face of baseball. That was going to be what was going to drive in new viewers to the game. And now that's gone. Yeah, you still have two of the three, but it's now Soto and it is Machado. It doesn't have the same flair without Tatis. This is truly bad, not just for Tatis, but for all of baseball, because it really gives it a bad look. This is something where right now you see older players, like Cano is one that we can suspect that he was on steroids his entire career, but he was only busted late for them. If he really was only taking them late, that was for him trying to revitalize a career. This is Tatis here. This is a player that is in the prime of his career and is only getting better. And yet still is just finding ways to stay off the field. That's a character concern that you're starting to get at now. That is a mental concern that you have to be able to deal with as a team. And if you can't find a way to work around that, especially with a huge contract, you've now just not only outed yourself as an idiot, but as someone that is going to actively hurt the team. So sorry, Tatis, you screwed up on this one. And you know what? Unless you can figure out how to make amends for you now actively cheating on this, you're going to have a really hard time getting somewhere else to play.
You know, and here's the thing is, and I'm just seeing this, a couple of my friends are talking about, like, what if the Padres, will the Padres think about trading Tatis? And the thing is that I personally don't think that will happen, because bear in mind, like I said, he's only 23 years old. He's young. You know, a lot of young ball players make mistakes like this. I am obviously very, very concerned now. You know, this is a guy who we think of as a face of baseball. He's a great ambassador for the game. To see him, you know, falling off his bike, you know, when he probably shouldn't be on it. And I mean, the failed drug test, I mean, I don't think he's been doing this in the past, but, you know, he's still young. And I do think he has time to mend his image. It's just the Padres really have to do something, like sit down with him and figure things out, because that's just a horrible, horrible look for him and for the organization. So I'm curious to see how the team handles it. And the Padres have played without him all season. And that's kind of what I've been hearing the players say, is that, all right, we haven't had him all season, so we'll see how the rest of the year goes. But hopefully he does come back next year, learning from his mistakes, staying healthy, not doing things off the field. So we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, overall, I think it's just lame. It's bad for everyone involved. There's no winners here. And it sucks that you have a player as talented as Fernando Tatis, and he has taken out a full season, not a fluke injury or like a baseball thing. Fernando Tatis is solely responsible for missing 162 games of the 2022 season. Point blank.
And that's really the biggest problem here, is that, again, he's 23 years old. This is a kid that is, again, one of the faces of the game. And to see at this time, this is really where players are really developing. This is really where players are starting to get that strong grip of the game and then truly make the game their own. And he's losing an entire year of that. If this was at age, you know, 40 or so, it wouldn't matter as much. You just retire and that would be the end of it. But no, this is going to affect the rest of his career, him missing out this entire year. So with Tatis, hopefully, you know, hopefully some news comes out that, you know, makes him out in a better light with all this, though severely doubt it, really, really doubt it at this point. So hopefully something comes out that changes all of this and it'll make his return feel good and it'll make his ability of trying to earn the trust back of his teammates and all Major League Baseball go a little smoother. But now we're going to head over to someone that is not going to be able to smooth out anything anymore, as he has been fired by the team, and that is the Rangers manager, Chris Woodward, fired as the team's skip. And it comes off of a pretty interesting overall haul. I mean, you take a look at what Woodward has done over his entire career. Just this year alone, he had a record of 51-63, where after the team had enormous expectations after signing guys like Corey Seager and all these other people, again, spending nearly $500 million in the offseason, and still finished at this point right now, 12 games below 500, and as a manager, has a 211-287 win-loss record. So, guys, we know that there's more than likely another ulterior motive to this whole release. But I'm going to say, I like seeing Woodward gone just because I didn't think he was a good manager to begin with. But there's also a little bit more to think about when you take a look at the moves that the GM has made. Guys, what are your thoughts on this?
So, with this in Texas, I think there's a bit of a disconnect between where the franchise is headed and what Chris Woodward was doing, and that Woodward almost wasn't the right manager for the situation. And it's weird when you have a disconnect like this from a manager perspective or head coach in other sports and what the general manager's thinking and the direction of the franchise, that this to me kind of screams like you're not on the same page. You're in a different book. You have a manager that's not gelling with the organization he has. And maybe the GM just, or the management in Texas thinks, oh, we were supposed to be contender this year. And then Chris Woodward is more of a rebuilding type head coach, like a manager, sorry. And I'll give an NFL example, like Dan Campbell and the Lions. Do we think Dan Campbell is going to win a Super Bowl with the Lions? Most people think not. But he's a good coach to have when the team stinks, when the team has 5 or 6 wins in 2 seasons. Okay, yeah, that works. Right. So I think Woodward is a good manager for a 75-win ball club. But if you're Texas management and you just spent $500 million on Corey Seager and Marcus Semien and your team is nowhere near a playoff spot, I can see why you're going to fire Woodward, because there's this disconnect. And this is why it's dangerous. Like, expectations are dangerous, right? Like, you look at Baltimore. Baltimore might miss the play, might not make the playoffs, but they still should have the AL manager of the year based on expectation. Baltimore was supposed to win 60 games. They're going to win probably 85, 90. Great. But Chris Woodward coming into the season before, or coming into like November, okay, Texas is going to win 70 games, you know, okay. They're going to, the likes of Josh Jung, their star third base prospect. Okay, you know, he, get him up maybe, and this is a rebuilding year. Everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be good. And then you sign Semien and Seager, and all of a sudden, oh, this team should push 85 wins, 90 wins. They should, you know, push for the 6th seed. There's just a disconnect there. So I think Woodward is almost miscommunication. Alex, I'm sure you think different, or you have a different perspective because you're in the division, but I think this is more of the organization screwed up, as opposed to, I think, Woodward screwing up, if that makes sense.
My thing is, why are they firing him 114 games in the season? All first of all, like, all right, if you're clearly fed up with how the team is doing, like, you fire him at the All-Star break maybe, but at this point, like, there's 7 weeks left. You, I would just let him manage the rest of his contract. You know, the thing is here is that when he first took over the Rangers, they were coming off a pretty awful 2018 season. And he got them to 78 wins in 2019. But then you have to look at, like, you know, what are the moves that the Rangers made, you know, in this time? You know, all right, Joey Gallo, instead of selling high on him, they held on him. All right, fine. But, you know, let's trade Emmanuel Clase for 34-year-old Corey Kluber. That's a great trade, right? I mean, they're just – I think that really Chris Woodward – bear in mind, this is his first managerial gig at the major league level. I think he's going to get another gig because I think he deserves another shot. You know, the Rangers weren't gifted with a great squad. I mean, all right, sure, they picked up Seager and Semien in the offseason, but Semien has a 98 OPS plus, and the rest of the team around him, I mean, their team ERA is 4.09. That's 12th in the AL. But they've actually scored the fifth most runs in the AL, 511. And, you know, Jonah Heim's having a solid year for a catcher, and Nathaniel Lowe's having a solid year, and Dallas Garcia. The Rangers aren't as horrible as their record shows, I would say. Actually, their Pythagorean win-loss indicates that they should be around 500. All right, maybe they are underperforming a little bit, but I don't think that's entirely on Chris Woodward. If you look at the way the roster's comprised, it's a very top-heavy team, and, I mean, Woodward just kind of gets screwed over here. I mean, it's the same way it always goes, is as soon as your team underperforms, who's the first person to go? In other sports, it's the head coach. In baseball, it's the manager. I personally think that John Daniels is really to blame here. I mean, like I said, he's the guy who traded Class A for Corey Kluber, and then Kluber only threw one pitch. He held on to Joey Gallo probably a little too long. You know, he held on to Kyle Gibson. I mean, I guess he was able to trade Gibson, but, you know, he held on to Lance Lynn for too long, didn't get enough for him, held on to Mike Minor too long, in my opinion. I think going 78-84 does not equate to trading for an aging veteran to try to go for the playoffs. So I guess, you know, clearly Woodward was on an expiring deal, so he was probably on his way out anyway, but I think he isn't the main person to blame for the Rangers' struggle.
Yeah, and I don't think that's, you know, the main person to blame for the struggle is Woodward. I just don't think that Woodward is a good coach in general. I just think that overall for Woodward, he is someone that, okay, I'm going to bring this way back here for a second to kind of prove my point. He's an old style manager in a game that is not conducive to that anymore, as I think we're seeing a lot more with Tony La Russa. Going way back, I want to say, I think this is 2019. I think it was 2019. 2019 or 2020, one of the two. Anyway, regardless. There was a game between the Padres and the Rangers.
Where the Padres, was in 2020, yep.
The 2020, okay, thank you very much. There was that game where the Padres were absolutely shellacking the Texas Rangers, and a younger and hopefully less roided up Fernando Tatis Jr. comes out to the plate and hits a grand slam against it, and Woodward goes off on Tatis saying he broke the unwritten rules of baseball, talking about that if you are winning a game by a large amount, that you just let it happen and let the game end out. To which Woodward was basically verbally harassed by the entirety of Major League Baseball and its fans. And even MLB The Show took shots at Chris Woodward with their unwritten rules program. And which again, that was really funny. But the idea is, like, just saying that his ideas are old and bad. And am I saying that the old-style manager can't work? No. I'm just saying it hasn't worked. And we've seen here from the Rangers, yes, the team hasn't been the best around him. But even then, a good manager finds ways to win games. A good manager finds ways to go and work with his players and make them better. As we take a look on what he has done overall, as a record, he has a losing record as a manager. And in the 2021 season, had a 60-102 loss season. 2020, in the short 60-game season, again, 22-38. In 2019, again, did go the entire time, 78-84. Those are bad numbers. I'm sorry that, yeah, you know, hey, you're working with a bad team. It's going to be hard to try and get those wins. You still got to do something with that. And on top of it, when I've watched him get, as a Mariner fan, I have watched a lot of games with Chris Woodward as the manager. And he doesn't seem to have a grip really on anything. He just continues to manage the team. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. You watch it and you watch each and every game, and you basically just keep on thinking, this is the same old Rangers. It's the same old Rangers, and it's bad. That's a bad connotation. Like, it's like, again, saying same old Mariners when they suck. Like, it's a problem. And I watch this, and I just think that, okay, you know what? This guy doesn't deserve to be, you know, a coach. And you know what? Hey, apparently Rangers thought the same thing. But I do agree, though, that he is not the main reason for the team's downfall. The team, it goes all the way up to the top with Daniels. It goes all the way up to the top with everything. The team overall needs work, and it needs new leadership. It's just like you said there, Mac, the easiest thing to get rid of is the coach. That is the easiest thing to get rid of, the skipper, coach, whatever you want to call it. And that's always going to be the little, you know, Band-Aid on the situation. As a YouTuber, Urinating Tree said, it's the Band-Aid on the gangrenous wound. And that's kind of what I see here with the Rangers overall, is that they have so many problems. And it really became obvious during the offseason when they signed all these people to massive deals. John Gray, Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, that all of them were signed to huge deals that, again, all the deals they made totaled out to be about $500 million. Like, if you're spending that amount of money, you've got to see some level of return on it. And on that one, I'm going to even say with that level of money, you have to see a pretty immediate return. And they haven't seen that. This season right now, the Rangers are well below 500. They are still technically competing for a spot, but I mean, come on. Right now, the West is basically just the Astros and the Mariners. And even then, the West is basically just the Astros with them still having, what, a 10-game lead over Seattle, something like that. So, look, I don't think that Woodward is the reason, but he was a reason. And I would be shocked if there was another team that took him in to be the manager, especially since we've seen that old style is starting to hurt teams. Take a look at the White Sox. A team that should be young, electric, and exciting is very mid. It's extremely mid. We have go for it. Do we have any other notes we want to say on this team?
Well, yeah, I think
go ahead.
I think, you know, like I said earlier, though, I mean, it's Woodward's first managerial gig in the majors. I'm sure he'll learn from this. It's not like he's Tony La Russa, you know. Tony La Russa, this is probably the last managerial gig he'll ever get because he's much older. I think if Woodward gets another shot, you know, say in a few years, it could turn out well. I mean, look, we thought Gabe Kapler, you know, when he was basically rushed out of Philly because his team underperformed, but then he goes to San Francisco and manages his team to win 107 games in 2021. You know, everyone thought, oh my God, like, what are the Giants doing hiring Gabe Kapler? But it turns out Gabe Kapler is actually a good manager when you give him a roster to work with. I don't think Chris Woodward had a workable roster in Texas. So I think if he gets another shot with a different team, I think he will eventually have success as a manager.
Yeah, and it's all about how the pieces fall into place, that you look at a manager's record or a head coach in other sports and you think, oh, well, manager good equals lots of wins. Well, sometimes it's more of a case of that team's very talented. Like, there are – I've been reading the Book of Basketball by Bill Simmons, and he makes the point that not many NBA coaches matter. Not many NBA coaches are like helping you win championships, right? There's a handful for every Phil Jackson, there's 25 guys that don't matter in a given year, right? So I think this is a case of it might not have been the right fit. It might not have been the right roster. It might not have just been the right manager for the roster. And there's an alternate universe that they hire, I don't know, Wiss Woodward, and they win 100 games. Or he, Chris Woodward, goes to, I don't know, the A's and they win 100 games. Like, there's a universe that could happen, I guess. Sometimes the fit just doesn't work. And I think this is a situation that the fit didn't work. And Texas put too many eggs in the basket for this season. And Woodward wasn't the man for the job.
And that's fair to go along with on this. I think I just more feel that when it comes to a manager like this, you have this kind of talent around you, you have to do at least something. And I mean, we kind of made the joke at the beginning of the season that the Rangers spent, you know, they spent $500 million to finish fourth in the American League West. Well, hey, they're about to beat that right now. It looks like they're probably going to finish third. But, you know, that is still really no excuse. One other side I will bring up, and then we'll move on to our next topic here, is I was looking at his baseball reference as a manager. And one thing that's kind of interesting here is I was looking at his challenges. The challenges and the overturn percentage that he has had. And in every single year, he has gone down in percentage from how well he has done overall. In his first year, 2019, in 46 challenges, he got 29 overturns for 63%. You know, that's pretty good. Not the greatest, but all right. Then in 2020, in 21 challenges, got 11 overturned. Okay, no, not as good a 52.4% rate, but you know what? Still getting it right over half the time. Then 2021, only 20 challenges despite playing over double the games, actually about 2.5 times the games, only got 9 overturned to 45%. Okay, you know, that's again just about a drop of 7, but that's still, you know, right around half. And then this year with 36 challenges so far in this. So, mind you, again, in 2021, another 162-game season, he only did 20 challenges. And in 2022, is already at 36 and has only overturned 12 of that for an overturn percentage of 33.3 repeating percent. While I know that's not the end-all be-all for a manager, I just want to throw that one little bit out there, as that is something that is very much still within the manager's, you know, discretion to do. And it definitely does take a lot to be able to say, all right, is this worth the challenge? Be able to to trust your guys up top and be able to say, all right, do I trust my guy? Do I trust what they're saying? Do you go for it? Because it can mean a lot during a game, especially with how much especially if you fail it and then something else comes up that you want challenge but can't, it's a big thing. Anyway, with that being said, we're going to move on to our next topic here. We're going to end on a little bit of a more fun note. We're going to play a bit of a game here. No, we're not playing Jeopardy. We don't have enough time for that. We are going to instead play a little bit of buy or sell. You see this on a lot of other shows here where I have 3 right now. We may add a little bit more to it depending on time. Right now, I have 3 topics here that I want you to tell me if you are buying what it is or if you are selling it. Do you think it's going to happen? Why do you think it's going to happen? Or why you don't think it's going to happen? And a lot of these are based on a recent, very recent hype thing. So we're going to start out with probably what is going to be the easiest one here. Talking earlier about Fernando Tatis getting suspended. The Padres do lose one of the best players in baseball. Does this hurt their playoff chances at all? Some people are saying yes. Some people are no. Do you buy that Tatis leaving the team makes the Padres not a playoff contender?
I'm buying this. So they're probably going to make the playoffs. You know, 6 teams make the playoffs. They have a pretty solid buffer there. And even if they, I don't know, face the Dodgers for the last 50 games of the season, they're probably okay. So I would say playoffs, I don't think it changes anything. But in terms of being a contender, I think this severely limits their upside in the playoffs. This severely limits what I think they can do in a series. And if you told me you're going into a series with potentially the 3 best players in that series with Machado, Soto, and Tatis, that's a scary out. Like, regardless of how you feel about the rest of the lineup, which is halfway decent, but like, how many guys in the National League are better than any of those three guys? There's not too many of them, but now you lose one of them, you lose a key piece there. And I think the Padres were, I believe, fourth in World Series odds. I think it was the Yankees, Dodgers, Mets. I guess the Astros were up there. So the Padres were fifth in World Series odds. I don't think you can have them five anymore. I would take Atlanta. I would take Seattle. I would take St. Louis even at this point. So I would knock them down into that next tier of teams that you're sure they're going to make the playoffs. So you can't have their odds be too long. But at the same time, I think you have to have some realism here and say they just lost one of the best players in the sport. I know he hadn't been there all season, but he was going to be an X factor in a, you know, in a playoff series. And he has had his playoff moments at times in his career that, hey, you know, having Fernando Tatis Jr. in a series is helpful. Well, the Padres no longer have that luxury.
I'm going to sort of second your sentiment here, because while I think they're a playoff contender for sure, you know, I remember MLB.com dropped power rankings after the Soto trade, and they actually put the Padres ahead of the Mets on the power rankings after getting Soto. And now, so at that point, you're considering the Padres to be one of the top four teams in baseball. I can't say that anymore. I don't think they're a top five team right now. Yes, they have Soto, but they are, don't get me wrong, I think they are a playoff team. Will they make a deep run? I can't say that. I think they are, no, all right, maybe they get past the wild card round depending on who they face. Like, if they match up with an NL Central team, maybe they beat the Cardinals or the Brewers. I can't see them getting past the Braves. I can't see them getting past the Mets or the Dodgers. And look, I get the Padres have taken 4 of 6 from the Mets this year, but I just don't see it happening. I buy that they're a playoff team. I don't buy that they are a World Series contender. So that's just that it's their offense has been like mediocre all year other than Machado, but now, okay, Soto is the boost and so is Drury. Josh Bell will be a boost. Then again, they've also been shut out like 3 times already since they got Soto. So, sure, they make the playoffs, not very far, though.
I follow your guys' sentiment exactly here. I buy that they are, that they do make the playoffs. I sell that they make a deep run because, yes, they did lose a huge talent in Tatis. And even with Tatis, you know, they weren't doing amazing. They were doing pretty darn good, but in a... You would think, you look at this Padres team and you think they should be much better than what their record says, because right now their record really is, it's only 65-53, 12 games above 500, which, don't get me wrong, that's good, but at the same time, that's only barely there for the third wild card spot in the National League. The National League is truly scary right now. Milwaukee is only a game and a half back of them, where Atlanta, Philadelphia, San Diego, and Milwaukee really are the ones competing for those 3 spots. I think more than likely San Diego makes it to the playoffs, but I don't see them making it as a large run to the World Series. But you know what? The playoffs have shown that anything is truly possible. So I don't know. I do think that with the additions they've made, they are at least a playoff team, but farther than that is where it really gets iffy. All right, next topic on the docket for buy or sell. Here, we have talked a lot about a bunch of teams in the National League. We're going to move over here to the American League Central, to be exact, as the Cleveland Guardians have really been making a huge splash right now. Hey, there's splash. As right now, they do currently take the AL Central at the moment with a 62-54 record. The Minnesota Twins now at a 59-55 record. We've all kind of agreed that the American League Central is one of the weirdest divisions in all of baseball. But do you buy Cleveland's rise to the top of the division?
I am 100% buying the Cleveland Guardians. You look at this team and they do an excellent job of what I like to call condensing the baseball game. They have a man by the name of Emmanuel Clase pitching in the ninth inning. So every game they play is essentially an eight inning affair, very similar to like what the Mets do, what any team with a dominant closer does, that you just have to beat them in the first eight innings because you're not beating them in the ninth. And then you throw out some of their other relievers, Trevor Stephan, Karinchak is back. And you are slowly but surely eating up that eighth inning, eating up that seventh inning, and you are like a python getting your prey, and you are forcing other teams to beat you in the first six innings. So if they can't hit your starter, if they can't hit Shane Bieber, if they can't hit McKenzie or Savale or Quantrill or pick your guy, you're stuck. And all it takes is one Jose Ramirez craziness. You know, all it takes is a one Stephen Kwan. Andres Jimenez had two home runs today. Granted, they did play a doubleheader and they did lose one game to the Tigers. Like major props to Cleveland for this. They strong lineup. They're getting production from unexpected places, and the staff has been very good. And then you have Clase in the ninth inning, so you're just locking everything down. So I am confident that the Guardians win the division, and I don't have would not want to face him if I were an American League playoff team.
You know, I almost feel the same way about the AL Central that I did about the NL East last year, which is last year the Mets had many opportunities to put away the NL East and they just didn't, and obviously they let the Braves go right past them. And this year the Twins, I mean, the AL Central, the Guardians and White Sox haven't, you know, have sort of been like tripping, you know, especially the White Sox. The White Sox, they came in as the heavy favorites this year to win the AL Central, and they've been largely mediocre this year. And the Twins have just failed to put the division away. And now, look, the Guardians are ahead of them. At this point, I'm buying that they're, I'd buy that the Guardians are taking this. You know, you look up and down this roster and, you know, Clase's been fantastic, but also Eli Morgan's been pretty good. Great strikeout to walk ratio. Trevor Stephan has been good. Henkes has been pretty good. James Karinchak all of a sudden reverted to his old form. He's got a 1.08 FIP, 28 strikeouts and 15 2/3. That rotation with Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, Plesac, Savale, if he's healthy, you know, it's pretty solid. They have the fifth best ERA in the AL. And then that offense has really been underrated this year. I think Jimenez has been great. I'm really happy for him. Josh Naylor's actually been pretty good. Jose Ramirez is obviously Jose Ramirez. Stephen Kwan, he's not a power hitter. He gets on base a lot. I just think that they're like a pesky team, but they also have some sneaky pop with guys like Ramirez and Naylor and Jimenez. So I think at this point they're going to end up running away with this division. The Twins have had some truly stupid losses like they did the other day against the Angels. So yeah, I don't see anyone really stopping the Guardians. Maybe the White Sox if they get hot, or if the Twins magically catch fire, but the Guardians have won 10 and 15. I think they take this division.
I 100% buy all this, because the main thing that I see with this team overall is that this team has something that I think the Twins lack, and I think a lot of other really good competent teams lack, and that is extremely solid pitching. We talk about their starting rotation being absolutely phenomenal here. I mean, you got a rotation of Shane Bieber, Tristan McKenzie, Cal Quantrill, Zach Plesac, and Aaron Savale, that all of them are doing pretty darn well. Savale, not as much as the others, but still, you know, doing well. You have Tristan McKenzie, who's looking like one of the best pitchers in baseball right now, and Shane Bieber, who, again, is also one of the best pitchers in baseball. They have three players all with an ERA plus of over 100. And that's not even to bring in the bullpen, where you only need to say one name, and that tells you exactly what you're going to have to face. And that's Clase. Emmanuel Clase is, in a lot of people's opinions, the best closer in baseball. Having a cutter that moves like that and is as fast as that cutter goes is unfair. It is extremely hard to hit and has one of the hitters fear that pitch, is what I'm trying to say. That pitch is absolutely devastating. Edwin Diaz definitely is still one of the best. I think it's actually really close between the two of them. I think it's actually really close.
I'm going to heavily disagree with that, but sorry, I look at a guy who strikes out more than half the batters he faces, and I can't say he's not the best closer.
You know I love Edwin Diaz. You know I love him. He is my boy. He is my boy. Hey, former mayor, I gotta support my boy. But I don't know. It's really tough. We're not talking about who's the best closer. That's another conversation for later. And I will definitely probably change my mind on who the best is before that conversation happens. But Class A is one of those guys that you absolutely fear when you come up to the dish. And so along with that, one of the things that really makes, I think, baseball interesting is that there are a few things that you could really do to really solidify yourself as not just a top player in the regular season, but also as a top player in the postseason, and that is starting pitching. When you have a deep rotation, that is going to help you win ball games. And when you compare the two rotations, I mean, I think I have to take, you know, the Guardians rotation. It's, in my opinion, just better. So you take that logic here. You say, okay, now they're probably going to take that Central Division. How well do they do in the postseason? And I think they could really turn some heads if they do make that postseason rush. With how good they have been, pitching is going to be what ultimately dominates a lot of the time in the postseason. And when you have say if you even go to four stars during that time where you have Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, and Plesac all going one after another, that's really good. I mean, those are four guys that you can send onto the mound each day and think, you know what? I've got a chance to win this ball game, no matter who the opponent is. So with that, any other last words on this buy or sell before we move on to the last one?
I just think that the Guardians sort of, they're like a year ahead of schedule on their rebuild, and I think they've certainly exceeded expectations this year. So this year, sort of like when the Braves started their run atop the NL East in 2018, I think if the Guardians win the AL Central this year, it's just the start of something big in Cleveland.
Just giving the whole idea that Cleveland can actually win something, having that have any sort of leverage makes me feel a little bit weird. Regardless, sorry, Cleveland. Anyway, we're going to move on to our last buy or sell here. And for this one, we're going to stay in the AL, but we're going to move to the AL East. And again, I still can't believe we're talking about this team in August as a playoff contender. But the Baltimore Orioles are being pesky and are keeping themselves relevant basically on the absolute heated blood of one Adley Rutschman and a lot of people. Guys, I still absolutely dumbfounded we're talking about them right now, but do they have a shot to play October ball?
I am buying the Baltimore Orioles. I hate to buy all three things because that kind of seems lame, but let's talk about what this team does well. To me, Adley Rutschman has been one of the best, if not the single best catcher in baseball this season. I know he's only played 67 games, 275 plate appearances, but the Orioles dominate when he plays. He has been unbelievable defensively. He has been productive from both sides of the plate. 23 doubles, 6 home runs, OPS plus of 125 entering play tonight. Anthony Santander has been productive. Cedric Mullins, 24 steals. Jorge Mateo, 27 steals. So this is a team that can play small ball. But you also have Ryan Mountcastle, 15 home runs. Santander, 20 home runs. More than a dozen guys, or half a dozen guys on the team have 11, 12, 13 home runs. And the bullpen has been a revelation. Last year was one of the worst bullpens in baseball. This year it's been one of the best, if not the single best, with the Yankees imploding. Dylan Tate has worked to a 2.56 ERA, Felix Bautista, 1.69, Cionel Perez, 1.12 ERA, Keegan Aiken, 2.63 ERA, just arm after arm after arm, and they are pitching really well in the Creative Park in Baltimore now, with, you know, moving the left field fence back, and they've, you know, taken advantage of that, and respect them and respect to them for grinding out these wins, making bettors a lot of money in the process. So I'm buying the Orioles. I think they will make the playoffs.
I'm going to buy the Orioles as well. And I didn't think I'd be buying on all three things today, but you know, when you look at it, the Orioles have, I mean, they have their chance to make it this year. I think, you know, the Rays have been sort of up and down. The Jays have also been kind of up and down. Like the Yankees, I don't know what's going on in the Bronx right now. They've lost 10 of 13. The Orioles have been the best team in the AL East, arguably the best team in the AL since the All-Star break. I think looking up and down, all right, maybe they aren't a complete roster yet, kind of like the Guardians. They're still, you know, a developing young team. But they're exciting. Adley Rutschman's been outstanding. He already has 2.8 career WAR in 67 games. That's fantastic. Draws a lot of walks. He does not strike out. He has a great approach at the plate. 23 doubles in 67 games. That is a big number. You know, he's strong behind the plate. And then you got guys, Mountcastle's been heating up again. Santander's hit 20 homers. You know, Cedric Mullins has sort of shown signs of his old self. Same with Austin Hayes. Obviously, I mean, they needed to trade Mancini and Lopez, but I think those guys were both easily replaceable. Felix Bautista has been electric out of the bullpen. He's a wicked splitter and an electric fastball. Like, I think this team, if there's a team that could surprise us more than the Guardians when it comes to making the playoffs this year, it's got to be the Orioles. So I think they end up getting past Tampa Bay in the final weeks of the season, and they get that third wild card team. So I'm really hoping that they make it. I mean, Baltimore, I mean, they lost 110 games last year. I think this is their time to shine. And also, I might be seeing them play this week at Camden Yards, so I'm looking forward to that.
All right, I guess I'm going to have to be the contrarian here, where I'm going to have to say, sorry, Baltimore, as much as orange is my favorite color, you're not making the playoffs. And I have a couple of reasons why for this. And as much as I want to see Baltimore in the playoffs, because I think that would be absolutely incredible, I legitimately don't know how it's going to work. Like, I'm trying to look at Tampa Bay's schedule right now, because the key word that comes to all of this, or the key phrase I should say, is strength of schedule. When you take a look and see what do they have left to do this season to get the job done, can they come through with it? Well, let's take a look-see here, because there are three teams that I'm gonna analyze here when it comes to this. And we're going to talk about the Mariners, the Rays, and the Orioles. So, for the Rays overall, the rest of their schedule is basically as follows. They play against New York, Kansas City, Angels, Red Sox, Marlins, New York, Boston, New York, Toronto, Texas, Houston, Toronto, Cleveland, Houston, and Boston. Those are a lot of really scary teams on that, including, again, the Guardians, who right now we're all buying to win the division. Then you have New York, who is still, even though they've been losing a lot recently, are still a very, very scary team. And then, again, Kansas City, that's still hitting well. Boston's started to work things out as well. They have a pretty strong schedule. Now looking at the Orioles here, and their schedule does not get much easier. Here, they have Toronto, one game against the Chicago Cubs. Just one singular game out there. How's it going? And then they got Boston, Chicago, White Sox, Houston, Cleveland, Oakland, Toronto, Boston, Washington, Toronto, Detroit, Houston, Boston, New York, Toronto. Now, of that, there are a lot of playoff teams that are in there. So it's going to be really hard for them to try and keep up this pace against that strong of a schedule. If they can, then heck yeah, they are absolutely able to try and make a playoff run. If they can make it through that gauntlet. But then I look at the Mariners, all right? The Mariners' schedule goes, for the rest of the season, goes as follows. Angels, Oakland, Washington, Guardians, Detroit, Guardians, White Sox, Atlanta, San Diego, Angels, Oakland, Kansas City, Texas, Oakland, Detroit. I don't think it takes a mathematician here, or I don't think it takes anything too special to see that the Mariners have the easiest strength of schedule for the rest of the way through between all these teams. In fact, if I remember right, actually, from what I was hearing earlier, they have the easiest schedule of all Major League Baseball teams going into the playoffs. So there's a reason why right now, if you look on the playoff predictor odds for on Baseball Reference, Seattle has a playoff predictor odd of a little over 80%, I believe. Whereas for the Orioles, it's about 45. And the reason why is because of that strength of schedule. That strength of schedule is going to be what bites them, where they're really going to be competing head-to-head against the Rays. The Rays, I think, are their biggest competition. The Mariners definitely will still be competing as well. But you take a look now at the overall wild card standings. And Tampa Bay, at the moment, right now, it is close. It's still only a game and a half lead. Because right now, all three teams in the American League wildcard race are all tied for basically the same amount. I guess you could technically say Seattle is the worst of them just because they have a 0.001 percentage deficit, but same thing. So, looking at this right now, it's going to be hard for Baltimore because not only do them and Tampa Bay have a very similar strength of schedule, but Baltimore still has that 1.5 game deficit they have to work through as well. So I'm going to be the contrarian here and say that I sell on Baltimore. I think that they are having an incredible run. I will happily eat my words if they do end up making the postseason. But right now, I'm not buying it right now.
I will say, though, with those, you know, the strength of schedule obviously is a bit of concern. But you look at their bullpen, I feel like they have the potential to turn some of those tough games into wins. You know, because one stat that always sticks out about teams is how good are they in those one-run games or those close games. I think the Orioles have the bullpen that, you know, all right, they're up 2-1 in the ninth inning against Houston. I think they win those games. So, yeah, that's what I see happening. You know, we talked about the Mariners a lot last year with the amount of close games they won and the fun differential and all that. I think the Orioles sort of have that magic this year. So I could maybe even see an Orioles-Mariners playoff matchup coming up. I just think it's amazing how this team literally lost 110 games a year ago, was set to lose over 100 games again this year, and we're in the middle of August, and they are a playoff contender. Honestly, good for the Orioles, man. I'm really, really happy for that organization.
Yeah, I think it's great for Baltimore, even if they don't make the playoffs, even if they win, you know, 85 games or 80 games and they, you know, peter out near the end of the season. It's still a successful season. And I still think that Brandon High deserves every single American League Manager of the Year vote, barring something, I don't know, Seattle winning out or something strange like that. Of course, Seattle will win out. You're welcome, Alex. So I think Hyde has done a terrific job. I think the Orioles as a whole have gone about this the right way, that you bring up Rutschman, you bring up D.L. Hall made his MLB debut the other day. Grayson Rodriguez is coming soon, if not for injury. And I think the Orioles are going to be a fun team to watch for a long time. And I think Mac mentioned that the Guardians might be a year too early. The Orioles might be 2 years too early. Like, Adley Rutschman came up and was immediately a catcher in baseball. It's wild that that's a thing, that he has been so productive. And just think, he's not the only person there. The Orioles had one of the best farm systems, and they have, you know, tons of guys that are top 100 players, top 100 prospects, and it's just going to be a slow trickle of them into the majors, and the Santanders, the Mateos, they're going to be there, right? But the replacement level players that the Orioles have had for the last 10 years, it feels like, they're slowly getting phased out, and you're replacing it with young talent that has all-star potential, and guys like Adley, who could be the best player at his position in year two. So I think it's an exceptional job by the Orioles. I know there were a lot of painful years, a lot of Chris Davis strikeouts, a lot of, you know, Gleyber Torres, watching him hit home runs. I get it, but the future is now, old man, the old man being the rest of the AL East. And regardless of how the Orioles wrap up the next month and a half, 2 months, successful season, 100%.
No, I 100% agree right now. It's like with Seattle last year taking a huge step up in that rebuild, yeah, I think 100% that the Orioles would probably take it 2 years off of their rebuild time, especially with how well Rutschman has already done. And we can see that the team has that fight. They have that fight or flight mentality that's funny enough with Bird Flight. But I love watching them play. They are a team that is hungry to win. And then having a guy like Rutschman really come up and immediately start wrecking shop has been a joy to watch. All right, we're at the hour mark here. So there are a couple things we didn't get to today. We'll get to those at another point here. But let's end off the show. Do we have any other last thoughts we want to bring up before we say goodbye to the lovely viewers?
So I don't believe our listeners have gotten an introduction to one Vaughn Grissom. He's 21 years old, third youngest player in baseball right now, I believe. Wander is younger and Michael Harris is younger. But Grissom has played second base for the Braves. He played his sixth MLB game today. He has scored in all six games. The last player to do that is Jason Bay, former All-Star, former MVP caliber player, other than with the Mets. Sorry, Mac. Also, former Mariner, too. So, double whammy. Vaughn Grissom has played like a 31-year-old, and so is Michael Harris. And I have found an appreciation for the Braves that I know they won the World Series last year, and I know they went on this crazy like August, September, October run. And regardless of how this season ends, this has been the most exciting year of Braves baseball, if not for how many young players have been productive. Like how many times a guy like Michael Harris has come through in the eighth inning in a close game, or the other day, Vaughn Grissom, his fifth Major League Baseball game, 1-1, bottom of the ninth inning, works an 11-pitch walk. I don't know how many players are doing that in a big spot. I know it's against Miami, but it's on in the majors. You want to win that game, sweep the series, huge spot. And you are 21 years old, fifth MLB game, and you're, you know, waiting the pitcher out, you're fouling off tough pitches, and then you work a walk and you help out your team score runs. So baby Braves 2.0, I'm excited to see it, you know, whether the season ends with another World Series or if it ends in another playoff disappointment. This has been a thrilling season to be a Braves fan.
Now I will say for myself, this is the most fun I've ever had being a Mets fan. And it helps that that's the thing is the 2006 season. I was up until this year my favorite team ever, but that season there was no competition for the NL East. The Mets won by, I believe, like 12 games this year. You know, it probably will stay a race until late September or something. I don't actually know. Obviously the Braves won today big, but you know, I going to the games over the weekend. Citi Field was rocking on Friday night, and it was rocking on Sunday afternoon. Every inning, it feels like, you know, maybe it's just because the Phillies were in town, and that's a big divisional rivalry. But like it's been a lot of fun watching the NL East this year, and I mean I'm really happy with how the Mets played. Even when, you know, I know it's New York. Every time the Mets lose, the season ends. But you know, it's been a lot of fun this year, and I'm excited to see how these last 7 weeks shape out. I'm curious to see if those last three games in Atlanta in late September / early October, if they'll still matter.
I think this is really fun to kind of say that 2022 is the year of the CSC fan, just because all three of our teams are doing exceptionally well, and I don't know if we'll be able to say that again. Hopefully we will. But no, I'm exceptionally excited for my Seattle Mariners. Right now, they are currently playing against the Angels. It's a 2-2 ball game. And it kind of gives you an idea of when this is being recorded. But like you said there, Mac, this is one of the most fun times I've ever had being a Seattle Mariner fan. After 2 decades of pain, after 2 decades of it, seeing that number of about 80% chance of making the playoffs is heartwarming. Seeing it happen, me being happy to, you know, wear a Julio Rodriguez shirt to work, or me being happy to come home and watch a ball game again, where, you know, every game matters. where every game actually feels like it has weight to it. That is something that I have been longing to see. And the fact that I'm going to finish this podcast, go down and continue watching the game, makes me just so happy to be a Mariner fan, to see that 2022 is looking like it's going to be the year that ends the drought. I don't want to say I wanted to knock on wood, obviously, blah, blah, blah. But like last year was interesting because it was the surprise year. It was the year that everything felt unreal. It didn't feel like, wow, is this team really this good? Could this team actually make it to the postseason after this was supposed to be another rebuilding year? And to have them finish just short left a hunger, not only in the fans, but if you read Mitch Haniger's blog posts on it, in the players as well. And seeing how well they're doing this year, that hunger is still there, but that wonderment of, are they going to make it, doesn't seem to be there as much as it was. It feels like it's so much more attainable, like it's actually in our hands this time, whereas last year, we were reaching out for it. I cannot wait till October, because I want to see the Seattle Mariners physically break this curse. So, with all that being said, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening. Make a thank you as well to Matthias Ullman Kurosaki and Ryan Splashpots. You can go follow Mag at Matthias_A_K on Twitter. You can go follow Splash at Mr. Splashman 19 on Twitter. You can also go follow me at TheSportsGuy242. But for everyone, I am Alex. I've been your host for today's broadcast. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, and I hope to see you all real soon.